184, I'm not sure what rule it is, that outlines the process in the event you want to take the decision to have a closed session. And that would involve the leadership of Parliament and so on. So having considered all those things, I want to propose as follows, that we should be sensitive to the concerns that have been raised by the two witnesses that we spoke about yesterday, and not dismiss their concerns. But at the same time, honourable members, we must also ensure that we maximise transparency in the work of Parliament. I also think, honourable members, that we should never compromise on being consistent and operating in a manner that is fair to everybody. The final point that I want to make, honourable members, is that in considering the proposal that I want to put on the table, I think it's incumbent upon this committee and also on Parliament to communicate to all South Africans that on accepting employment in the public sector, we must understand that that employment comes with having to be held accountable. Whether you're currently in the public service or whether you've left the public service, but anything that happened under your watch, you should understand that you will and must be held accountable. And therefore, honourable members, and I'm raising this of accountability because we toyed with the idea of whether if somebody is no longer in the employ of the SABC, we should not be voting yet. I'm arguing that as long as it happened under your watch in the public service, you must understand that you'll be held accountable. The final point that I want to make, honourable members, is that we started a process yesterday, or the day before, and have gone through at least five witnesses who themselves came here not because they wanted to come here, but had to endure whatever pressure or pain they had to endure. To change midstream would seem to me to be unfair to those that had to go through the process. Having considered all those facts, honourable members, I want to propose that our position is that no session will be held in camera. It must be very onerous on anybody to come to Parliament to want to argue that he or her session must be in camera for the reasons that I've laid out now. So firstly, that we put multi-choice as a witness on hold, and secondly, while sensitive to all the concerns raised by potential witnesses, and our principal position as the voice of South Africans is that there should be maximum dissemination of information that is in the interest of South Africans, and therefore we must deny the request to have any session held in camera. I will then open it up for members to comment on these firm resolutions that I'm putting, the recommendations that I'm putting on the table, and then let's take it from there. Anybody wants to comment? Alright, everybody can do a comment. Alright, let's call the same stuff here at the top. We go up the line, down, and then down to the
please comment on the multi-choice proposal? In fact, I made that proposal earlier. I would want to agree with you, Chair, that if there are other processes that are currently underway, and therefore I would definitely abide by the decision that you've taken. It's a correct decision. We'll then have to wait and watch the space so that we get to the details of that, you know, that Chair. On the other issue of the closed meeting, obviously, in the best interest again of the public and the transparency process that we have been engaging in this Parliament, I again want to really support the decision that you, with your conclusion that you came up with, which really put us in a position that the public always would want to vote in the process. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I support your position that the recommendation on multi-choice. We can always call them in later. As far as the second point on, as you introduced, regarding closed and camera sessions, I concur with you that we have a duty as a parliamentary committee in terms of our rules and in terms of the constitution. We have a representative democracy based on openness and transparency, and I think we should leave that. Also, our rules, 184, gives effect to that, specifically to allow for public scrutiny of what we do. And we can always, when we get to matters, ask people some of the information they can provide throughout to you, so that it could also inform our business and conclusion on this matter. Thank you.
Honourable Olivia.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I agree with both proposals, but I want to end by rehashing the fact that those who come and testify here are not supposed to be threatened by anyone, because they are doing this so as to let South Africans know what is happening in their institution. Thank you.
Honourable Father?
Chair, I'm covered. I support for the recommendation.
Honourable Funde?
Thanks, Chair. I support both proposals. On the first one, the SABC first and foremost accounts to Parliament, so they must provide the documents to us. And then on the second one, like we've discussed before, ensure that there's protection for those witnesses that are threatened or are receiving death threats.
Honourable Mopano?
Chair, thank you. I support your proposal and what colleagues have said. But I think as a rider to the closed issue, you already had some closed meetings with several people, including the lawyers of Mr. Magube, Professor Magube, and other people, which you briefed us about. And if there are compelling matters that they would like to raise with you, perhaps ahead of the meeting, if there are such things that you could then bring to our attention, we'd appreciate it. But I think in principle, we stick to the process that you have outlined, which is fair, and indeed I would agree with the colleagues who are saying, in case we have people who have been already threatened, I guess those matters should be put on record here in the meeting, and such people should also lay a charge with the police, and I think we should also help the supporting them in those initiatives. Thank you.
Honourable Pena.
Thanks, Chair. On the monstrous issue, I think, I agree with you 100%. But can we just get an update maybe at the end of the session today as to the progress in terms of getting those documents from the SABC? And on the second issue, I also agreed. We did put Mrs. Mohoba under scrutiny here, and she was threatened. So there's no one else that we should give, so I changed my mind on that. I do think that we should send a very strong message to whoever at the SABC or anywhere else that is threatening people who come to this platform, that we must lay charges and we must protect these witnesses that come here. There is no one that is supposed to be threatening anyone. We must send a very strong message to whoever at the SABC threatened Mrs. Mohobo or whoever else is going to come going forward. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, members. So that is the decision of the committee that matters of multi choice will be put on hold until all other options have been exhausted, but we reserve the right to call them if indeed we want to call them. And secondly, that all our sessions going forward will be sessions open to South Africans who have an interest in what is happening here. We're not going to revisit these matters again, because this decision is a decision taken by a duly correct committee. So I'm hoping that those things are put behind us. And I also note that Mr. Naidu has joined us. So we did get your apology that there were traffic problems. And that was accepted by members, but it also afforded us an opportunity to do a bit of in-house matters. So we'll start with you in a second, and I'm assuming that by now you have caught your breath. Please be informed that by law you are required to answer fully and satisfactorily all the questions lawfully put to you, or to produce any document that you are required to produce in connection with the subject matter of the inquiry. Notwithstanding the fact that you answer that the answer or the document could incriminate you or expose you to criminal or civil proceedings or damages, you are, however, protected in that evidence given under oath or affirmation before a House or committee may not be used against you in any court or place outside Parliament, except in criminal proceedings concerning a charge of perjury or a charge relating to the evidence or documents required in these proceedings. I have been informed, Mr. Naidu, that you have chosen to take the oath. I think the document is before you there. If I could just read the one line, if you could just repeat after me, and then thereafter take the oath. I swear by Almighty God. I swear by Almighty God.
I swear by Almighty God
that the evidence I shall give,
the evidence that I shall give,
will be the truth,
will be the truth,
the whole truth,
the whole truth,
and nothing but the truth.
Nothing but the truth.
Thank you, sir. That has been dispensed with. We will get straight into the business of the day. Mr. Bonara, it is 10:25. If at all possible, sir, because we need to catch up time, can we allow you to do your business until 11 o'clock, after which we open up to members in very much the same fashion as yesterday. And just to be warned, Mr. Honorable O'Connor, you'll be the first one to prepare yourself, and we'll come all the way this way, and then the next will be the other way. Over to you, Mr. Bernard.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Naidu, can you, for the record, state your full names?
Krishna Naidu.
Give the committee academic background, please.
I'm a committee attorney acting as a consultant. large ANC, and also the master's degree in strategic studies.
You were until very recently a non-executive board member of the South African Broadcasting Corporation, is that correct?
That's correct. The possession of a statement, very much. Chairman, I was a non-executive board member between September 2013 and October 2016. In that time, I was also a member of the Audit, Social and Ethics, Risk and Finance, Investment, Procurement and Technology Board subcommittees. I was also deployed by the board to be a trustee of SABC Medical Schemes Board. Following my consultation in Johannesburg in October 2016 with Advocate Bernada, evidence leader, at the inquiry, and the subsequent resignation of all non-executive board members bar one, I wish to adduce evidence on the following matters under oath, which I've taken. One, board's legal incapacity to discharge its duties and take binding decisions. In terms of the South African Broadcasting Act 4 of 1999, a quorum of 9 members is required to transact business on behalf of the corporation. At the moment, the SABC board has 1 non-executive board member and 3 executive board members who perform their duties in acting capacities. Based on the above, it is apparent that the board does not have the legal capacity to discharge its fiduciary duties. The DF's board charter and control the affairs of the corporation and carry out its duties as contemplated in terms of Section 13, Subsection 11 of the Act, that's the SABC Act. On this legal interpretation alone, absent a long drawn-out inquiry, I hold the view that the National Assembly may invoke the provisions of Section 15, Capital A, Subsection 1, Subsection B of the Act, and recommend the dissolution of the board, because the board is not in a position to discharge fiduciary duty, adhere to the charter and control the affairs of the corporation due to legal incapacity. Point two, board application of responsibility and management usurpation of board responsibility. Generally, the dysfunctionality of a board can arise from one of two sources, generally. The application of a board of its responsibility or the usurpation of by management of the board's responsibility. Application of cases where board members, out of laziness, tardiness, or other reasons, neglect their fiduciary duties and substantially allow management to run the corporation. Usurpation occurs where management takes over responsibilities which properly lie within the domain of the board. In both instances, good corporate governance suffers. In the SABC, we had a curious cocktail of both application and usurpation brought about by an immoral and clandestine relationship between some non-executive board members and executive board members, and which was managed by a simple majority. This immoral relationship led to the creation of two groups at board level, one which was concerned with discharging their fiduciary duties, and the other, which was intent on achieving certain outcomes which are not necessarily in the best interest of the corporation. His unhealthy relationship placed Mr. Shlali Motsaneng as a ringmaster and left me with one burning question which I have not been able to answer to this day. Why were so many educated professionals so beholden to a high school dropout? The dysfunctionality located itself along this parallel and manifested itself strictly along this parallel. At times, it got so bad that even if one argued about the time of day, which could have been verified by a number of objective sources, the outcome would invariably be that which the Saudi group wanted. My protestations to bring a semblance of sanity to the board fell on deaf ears. For instance, on 9 February 2015, I requested the chairperson, Professor Magube, to convene a special board meeting based on a letter written to the board by Mr. Gavin Davis, a member of parliament. In that letter, Mr. Davis raised the issue of that amended memorandum of incorporation ultra-violated the Act, the Companies Act, and the Constitution. I informed the chairperson that these issues were new to me. No meeting was called. On 29 April 2015, and in furtherance of my concern that the memorandum of incorporation could be ultra-violated the Act, and therefore unlawful, I brought to the attention of the company secretary, Ms. Teresa Chalonet, some information I had gathered about the distinction between laws of specific application and laws of general application, and requested her to obtain a legal opinion from the SABC's legal department. Nothing was done. The appointment of Shlali Motsaneng in July 2014 as chief operating officer is probably the best example where the curious cocktail between the non-executive and executive board members, as aided and abetted by the Honourable Minister, was mixed. The facts are well known. I voted against the appointment of Shlali. The manner in which the board dealt with the public protector's report left one in no doubt that the board had no respect for good corporate government, a Chapter 9 institution, and Constitution and Parliament. Ms. Ellen Shabalala, the previous board chairperson, was a primary driver of this morass of dysfunctionality. Her conduct bordered on criminality. On 27 September 2016, and after witnessing the appointment of Shlali Motsaneng as group executive for corporate affairs on television, I wrote to the company secretary to impress upon the chairperson the need to convene an urgent board meeting. I received a negative response from Ms. Kelvinet about 2 hours before the board was due to meet the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Communication on 1st October 2016 in this room. One could go on citing other serious breaches of government, but in a nutshell, this is where the board went astray and why I believe it was dysfunctional. To enable the Shlali group to manage the affairs of the corporation on a simple majority, some non-executive board members were removed unlawfully, and two unsuccessful attempts were made to remove me as a board member. Point three, the unlawful removal of three non-executive board members. In my view, the late Hope Zinde, Ronnie Lubisi, and Rachel Kalidas were removed as board members on frivolous and unlawful grounds. The late Hope Zinde attended an ANC workshop on communications. Three other board members, Ms. Lakaza, Dr. Shizuma, and I attended that workshop and participated in the deliberations. Ms. Zinda was charged with divulging SABC information to a third party without consent and on a simple majority vote of the board proposed by the chairperson, Professor Magube, she was removed as a board member. Mr. Ronnie Lubisi was charged for having a conflict of interest for being the named auditor of two companies which did business. Despite my explanation of what constitutes a conflict of interest and Mr. Lobisi's protestation that he did not do any business with these companies, besides registering them, he was removed as a board member on a simple majority vote of the board proposed by the chairperson, Professor Magube. Ms. Kalidas was charged with fraud for having left an audit committee meeting early to catch a flight, whereas it was subsequently established she did not fly out that day. Once again, she was removed as a board member on a simple majority vote of the board proposed by the chairperson, Professor Magube. Point four, attempts by the minister and the board to remove me as a member. Two attempts were made to remove me as a board member. First was by the Minister of Communications in January 2015. I was summoned to a meeting with the Minister one evening. The Minister was not available to meet me, and two of her employees conducted the meeting. I was told that I did not attend meetings and I was disruptive in meetings. I told them I was convinced that the information presented to me was incorrect, but if the Minister persisted, I would tender my resignation. Whilst driving home, the Minister called to apologize to tell me that I was an asset to the board and should not even contemplate resigning. A few days later, I received a letter from the very same Minister asking to show cause why I should not be removed as a board member for failing to discharge my fiduciary duties. I decided to respond in writing to the Minister, telling her that her conduct bordered on illegality and that in law, no action could arise from a dishonorable cause. In short, I asked the Honourable Minister to reconsider her action. I never heard from her again. In my view, this was a classic example of a dysfunctional ministry which compounded the problem of a dysfunctional SABC board. Second attempt was by the board in September 2015 after an oversight visit to the SABC by the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Communications. The board chairperson, Professor Magube, wanted to have me removed as a board member because I had raised the issue of the three dismissed board members of the PPC. In my written response, I said that my interaction was constructive, inter vire the Broadcasting Act, and within the expectation and contemplation of the shareholder. I never heard from the good professor again on my removal. For the contract between SABC and MultiChoice, prior to my appointment as a board member in September 2013, the interim board had signed a contract with MultiChoice which drew widespread condemnation in the media. At the board meeting in October, many board members raised the issue of the contract with MultiChoice. It was also raised by board members of the then Minister Karim. The chairperson, Ms. Shabalala, acceded to my request that I consider the contract and provide the board with a legal opinion. In the subsequent meeting, I advised the board that the contract was unlawful and submitted reasons for arriving at this conclusion. The chairperson suggested that the board obtain a second opinion, which was subsequently done and which contradicted my opinion. After I made my input to the board, I received a call from Mr. Imtiaz Patel, Group Chief Executive of MultiChoice. He wanted to congratulate me on my appointment. I applied because he was an old friend. After some small talk, we went straight into the SABC MultiChoice contract, and he wanted to know what were the reasons for my opposition. Needless to say, I was shocked that the board was so leaky. Nonetheless, I gave him the reasons and suggested that the contract should be terminated and a new contract on more equitable terms should be concluded. He agreed with the proposition and said that the SABC MultiChoice contract was concluded very hastily. This contract and incident was the first place that I was heading down a long and rocky road.
Thank you, Mr. Agent. See, this inquiry has to be fair. We can't only focus on the alleged bad issues. Your statement also deals with some good things that took place in the corporation. Can you deal with those?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, not everything about the SABC is bad. I brought along a few meeting board packs to show the professionalism in which these are put together. Sometimes these packs are delivered to my home by SABC staff late at night. These qualities bear testimony to the hard work and dedication of SABC secretaries. The staff of the SABC constitutes a rich tapestry of experience, knowledge, skill, talent, and institutional memory, and are a priceless national asset in our young democracy. What is required is to conjure up the political will, to do the right thing, and place the SABC on a trajectory to enable it to deliver its basic outputs, to inform, educate, and entertain, and play a role in social cohesion and nation building. In that process, we can build a strong state-owned entity we can be proud of. Thank you.
distinction between two groupings in the board. Who belongs to which group within the board?
Well, looking from the time of inception, let's go back to September 2013, and the chairpersonship of Irene Sabalala. Well, she was certainly in the Slavi camp. I think of Patricia Zumba. I think they, and of course the three executives, Slavi, Watson, and others. And then the board dissipated quite quickly with the removal of board members, and it left just myself and Ronnie Lubisi was removed, Rachel Kalidas was removed. They were part of the group that were very serious about corporate governance and executing fiduciary duties at the board. In the end, we were left with 9 board members, 6 non-executives, 3 executives, and it was just Mr. Mabuso and I that were trying to oppose everything. So, in a way, the outcome of both was very predictable. It was always 7-2. In favor of the Slavi group.
The issue around the amendment of the Memorandum of Incorporation, you request that it be placed on the board agenda. Your response is that it was never done. Are you appraised of any reasons as to why this never happened?
Well, the amendments to the MOI were really initiated by the minister, and it seems that the intention was one is to find an easier way to remove board members. And what I found really unusual about that MOI is that it relied on the Companies Act, Section 71 of the Companies Act, to remove board members. But unfortunately, the minister and her crew did not have the courage put in the provision to admit board members. But if they had put in a simple provision of admitting board members in terms of the company fact, they wouldn't be just left with one board member today. So the fallacy of that whole aspect, and I believe that it's ultra vires that the memorandum of incorporation on this basis, you cannot substitute a law of specific application, which is the SA Broadcasting Act, with a law of general application. The SABC Act is very, very specific as to the role of the appointing authority for appointing board members and how board members are removed in terms of this inquiry like we're having today. So it's very specific, very detailed. Now one can't take a simplistic approach as is done in the MOI to remove board members just by simple voting around the table.
My question is, were you given any reason why this important document would not be subject of a discussion by the board?
We were not given many reasons except that this was driven mainly by the ministry and I think with the company secretary who played a role in developing that document. And after I got sight of the document sometime in July 2014 around here, I then made an input to the company secretary giving an opinion, I did some research and I picked up a case in the US and I told them that we needed to research this because that dealt with why it would be unlawful to take a law of general application like the Companies Act and substitute it for a law of specific application like the SABC Broadcasting Act. In fact, nothing was done about it, as I said in my presentation, but that in itself, I thought, made the MOI unlawful. The second point is that it also affected the way executives were appointed in the corporation. I mean, there used to be a process in the past which required some kind of board intervention or approval or certification. But that has been taken away completely, so it became the function of the CEO and COO to appoint executives. And what I found after the MOI became, law at SABC, you attend meetings and every meeting you find different people, so you you ask yourself, but what happened to Joe Soap at the last, well, at the last meeting? No, he's either been suspended or left. So he had this large turnover of staff. They were either suspended or they left. And you had all these acting appointees holding very, very senior positions. Now that in itself is a factor which contributes to dysfunctionality.
I accept that you hold strong legal views around the differences of interpretation. I don't want us to spend too much time there because I understand this matter is a subject of litigation. In your second last paragraph on page 2, you say the appointment of Ms. of Saudi Musanane in July 2014 as Chief Operating Officer is probably the best example where the curious cocktail between the non-executive and executive board members aided and abated by the Honourable Minister. What do you mean by this statement? Secondly, who is the minister you're referring to?
The minister on that date was Honourable Faith Nthambi. The unusual aspect, firstly, I mean, the board meeting took place late one evening, probably at about 6 or 7 o'clock, and I suppose that was done to accommodate some board members, but what made it even more unusual, apparently the minister was on the premises of the SABC, and it appeared that she had had a prior discussion with the chairperson at the time, Ellen Shabalala. So we had this board meeting, and we were given a legal opinion by an attorney on behalf of Mr. Motsalem, who told us what a great chap he was, and that he had been acting for far too long, and there was a need to consider him as a permanent COO of the SABC. So that was a prelude to this discussion. There was some discussion, there was a lot of opposition from those who felt that due process was not being followed. But nonetheless, it led to a kind of split in the House, a narrow split by, I think it was a split vote of about 6 against 5, 6 in favor of his appointment and 5 against his appointment. After that simple decision was taken, the minister was brought in. She thanked the board for having considered that matter, that is a matter of appointing Mr. Motsenang as permanent COO of the SABC. She said she had considered that recommendation because it went to her as a recommendation from the board. By that stage, it was about 11 o'clock that evening. And lo and behold, by 8 o'clock the next morning, she made a public announcement that Mr. Motsenang was the permanent COO of the SABC, so she probably considered it in her dreams.
At the bottom of that page 2, where you deal with the manner in which the board dealt with the public protector's report, you say it left one in no doubt that the board had no respect for good corporate governance. A Chapter 9 institution of the Constitution and Parliament. Those are very serious allegations. What do you mean by that?
Well, unbeknown to us as board members, the interim public protection report was given to the chairperson, Ms. Helen Shabalala, in November. Was about 2013, and this was not disclosed to the board. So when the final report came out in about February or March 2014, as a board we were very concerned that we were not presented with an interim report, but a final report. It then emerged from the chairperson at the board meeting that in fact she was given the report 3 months previously, but because the letter was addressed to her, she thought it was for her personal consumption only and never disclosed it to the board, and I thought that was very, very amateurish in my view. But in the meantime, she had solicited the services of an attorney and she was busy processing a response basically in defense of the self and in defense of Slavi Martin. And it also transpired that in that interim period after she had received the report, she had actually made representations to the public protector before the final report was published. So the board had no input into that final report.
Ms. Chavarella was also a non-executive board member. She was not an executive chairperson, correct?
That's correct.
Subsequent to Mr. Mussolini's appointment as group executive for corporate affairs on television, you wrote to the company secretary. What happened?
Well, the reason I wrote to the company secretary is that about a week after, I think, the Supreme Court of Appeal made its decision, I made my input to the board, and my input simply was that that decision of the SEA effectively terminated the employment relationship between SABC and Mr. Motsenegger. In other words, it was time to pack his bag, that decision in Bloemfontein. But it seemed that the board, the executive group CEO, Guma, had gone on his own without broad approval, and based on the advice of some lawyer at SABC, appointed Mr. Slavi Motsenegger as chief corporate affairs, head of corporate affairs. Now, in my view, that was unlawful. And I came to the conclusion that here we had somebody who had no right to be at a national key point. In fact, he was squatting at a national key point because that appointment was unlawful. So I thought it was appropriate for the board to meet. It was a serious issue for the board to meet and discuss it. But I couldn't get a response. In fact, I got a response about 2 hours before our presentation to Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on the 5th of October, which was eight or nine days later. A negative response.
The last question from myself relates to the example of the Joe Soap. To the changing of faces of the executives for various reasons. I want to link this to the MOI. My understanding is that the MOI before it was amended gave the board powers to oversee the appointment of executives. And that this amended MOI took those powers from the board, gave them to the executives.
Vested all those powers in the executives. In other words, changes could occur at a very senior level within the SABC without board knowledge.
Thank you, Chairman, for that question.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bernard. Your 5 minutes starts now, Honourable McKenna.
Thanks, Chair. Mr. Mandel, are you aware? Let me just get straight to the point. Where is Saudi getting his power?
I'm sorry?
Where is Mr. Saudi getting his power from?
I don't know. I mean, that's a question I've been asking myself, even in my presentation. You know, it's very unusual for any individual to make state on entity to behave in this particular manner. So either he's a folic of his own, or he's getting support by parties that I'm not aware of.
The amendments to the MOI, are you in concurrence with the belief that it was done solely by the minister without the consent of the
Well, it was done substantially by the minister and her team within the ministry, with some participation from the SABC secretariat. That's my understanding.
But it would have been it needs to be approved by the board.
Yeah, the board will participate in the development. Other than copies being sent to us from time to time, we raised our objections and made our protestations, but in the end, it was passed.
Do you have the letter in which you advised the minister that the MOI was illegally constituted? The amendments?
Yeah, I've got a copy of a short opinion that I sent to the company secretary, which I will make available to the committee.
And then the public protector's report. Do you have evidence that the minister was advised that the appointment of Mr. Motshwane was in contradiction of the public protector's report and therefore the email?
You mean the minister was advised? At what point did the minister be advised?
Well, was she not advised? Was she not advised that the process that took place in order to state Mr. Saudi was illegal in terms of the report? Was she not advised as to that fact?
There were two things, I think. First is, at the time the appointment was made, the public protector's report was made public. So the minister would have had an obligation to take cognizance of that fact. And the fact that the person that she was seeking to appoint was damned in that report, was subject to a whole lot of investigations, and the recommendation of that report was this particular individual should go through a process of a disciplinary inquiry. So the question then becomes that was that a proper appointment, was that a considered appointment, did the minister apply a mind properly to that appointment, and that's why the Western Cape High Court and the Supreme Court of Appeal made the finding that this appointment was made without proper application of one's mind.
Okay, no, that's fine. The executive then appointed him as the group corporate executive.
Are you talking about corporate executive or CEO?
No. I was talking about the CEO. Oh, then. I'm now talking to about the
September 2016.
Yeah. Was the board advised? Was the board meeting that happened? Was the board advised of the decision to reinstate him in another position? And was the minister advised on the illegality of that appointment?
As a board member at the time, I read about that appointment on the newspaper. So I saw it on television. Mr. Lane was appointed as group chief executive, and that prompted me to write this letter to the company secretary for the attention of the chairperson, because in my view, that was an unlawful appointment.
But in light of the fact that the MOI was then amended, is that MOI, the amendments to the MOI, what gave the powers to the executive to then reappoint him at a lower...
Notwithstanding the appointment of the MOI, the appointment of Mr. Montalain was unlawful, firstly by virtue of the SCA decision. That decision was the trigger that said this person has no place at the SCA.
Unfortunately, my dear friends, these are...
I had the last one.
Sure,
thank you, Mr. Nigel. Let me start at the end. The multi-choice contract. You have a problem with this emanating out of your fiduciary responsibilities to SABC, or because the media equivalent.
Chairperson, at the time we joined the board in September 2013, there was a huge media rage about this particular contract. So, as part of my fiduciary duties, I offered the chairperson at the time my services as an attorney, and he said, let me have a look at it. So, I think I was the only board member that really saw that contract. No other board member saw it. I went through it, drew up a written opinion, gave it to the board. And then I got this call from Multiple Choice, and I went to trust, and for the reasons, I mean, I can go into the details, but I don't think it's but it was clearly an unlawful contract, and it really is something that should not have been signed in my opinion.
The next question. The meeting that you had
meetings with various board members. My meeting was set for, I think, 7 o'clock that evening at home in Victoria.
But you then met the minister first?
Yeah, when I got there, the minister had just popped across to see the president. And so the meeting was started by the minister's advisor and some other gentlemen from the department.
Do you know the people or you don't?
I know the one person. He was the advisor at the time, Dan.
According to you, the report member, do you consider the minister as an internal player or an external?
I think the minister, generally, the role of the minister would be one of political oversight. I just think that the minister came a bit too close to the action that they say.
The role of the company secretary? Especially in the matters that you have raised.
I think that the company secretary could have done a lot more to give proper guidance to the board. You know, the company secretary is somebody, in her case, she was a chartered accountant, but the company secretary also has to give some kind of legal guidance on procedure. Now, you know, when as a board member, you write to the company secretary and say, please bring this matter to the attention of the chair. Only the chair and the deputy chair in terms of the act that can convene board meetings. We don't have powers to call board meetings. So we have to submit it to the company secretary, who then brings it to the attention of the chair. Now, I thought that the company secretary should have realized the import of some of the issues that were going around without proper discussion, without proper investigation. For example, the appointment of Mr. Montenegro as Chief Corporate Affairs Officer, that was a serious matter which warranted a meeting. Now, a company secretary can be called upon the chairperson who is not a lawyer, who does not have legal experience, and probably even less experience as chairperson in terms of good corporate governance, should advise that gentleman that, look, I think it's sufficiently serious to warrant a meeting. Now, that's where the company secretary came short, in my view, on many instances.
Soon my time is over.
Now you've got a minute, sir.
Oh, thank you. Now, as a member of the risk committee, did you often review, I mean, Team 3 directs that board members should at least review the risk profile, the risk policy, and what have you, annually. Were you doing it over your period of in the SEC?
The risk committee met regularly, quarterly. In fact, we met every 3 months, and we did a very thorough analysis of the risk facing the corporation. I mean, all of it, not just financial, physical risk, technology risk, and technology.
I want to then assume that the things that have been raised here as red flags would have been contained in your risk analysis program.
Depending what things.
Well, the things that you're talking about, your multi-choice, your minister's interference, your secretariat,
we didn't deal with those elements of risk. The multi-choice, if you recall, was dealt with right at the outset in September 2013. The minister's role within the SOBC is not something that would ordinarily fall within the ambit of the risk committee. We had terms of reference for the various subcommittees, and that
thank you so much, Mr. Naidu. Can we move over to Honourable Pandav?
Thanks, Chair. Mr. Naidu, so I just want you to talk me through.
To the mic.
That's fine. So on the 20th of September 2016, the SEA denied Ms. Mosulani's appeal, which means it was packed back. 2 days later, there is a draft resolution circulated to all board members requesting that he be appointed as acting COO. And then on 27th September, he was instead appointed as GE Corporate Affairs. What happened between the 22nd of September and the 27th of September?
I'm not aware of nothing that in my direction as a non-executive board member, but I can only piece together what happened after the fact. Some of us, I mean, in my team, speaking for myself, I object, I disapprove of that round robin resolution appointing. And in my comment section on the round robin document, I stated why. Because it would be unlawful to appoint him pursuant to the SPA decision. The minister, normally these round robin resolutions go to the minister in the case of Mr. Motsalani, because he's one of the three executives. And I think the minister was persuaded by the document and she did not appoint him to CEO. And then it was up to James Sanguma, who acting CEO, and then took it upon himself on the advice, as he says, on the advice of the lawyer of SABC to appoint him as head of corporate affairs. So that's how it came about. So that's what happened between those 5 days.
The GE corporate affairs position was not approved by the board, am I correct?
No.
And then Ms. Bessie Tumwana's appointment instead as acting COO, was that approved by the board?
No, I mean, I only realized she was acting CEO when I met her here on the 1st of October.
That would have not been approved by the board.
Ordinarily, it should have been approved by the board or gone to the minister as a recommendation from the board, but it never came to the board.
So who would have approved that appointment then? Would it have to be the minister?
The minister would make the final appointment acting on the recommendation of the board.
Okay. So since there was no board approval, one could then say that it was a decision taken by the minister without approval from the board.
Well, I'm not even sure whether the minister approved that appointment, because my understanding is that because the board had not made a recommendation, Mr. Tuana's calling himself the COO was unlawful. You know? So even if the minister appointed it, it would have been an unlawful appointment.
But, I mean, because as one of the witnesses said yesterday, the minister is a lawyer, she's aware of the legislative requirements. She should have known that she cannot approve an appointment which hasn't been approved by the board, correct?
No, and it's not difficult to remember that there's just three top executives at the SABC. We're not dealing with 3,000 people now. It's simple to remember, the minister, that these three people, in the due process, they must be considered by the board, recommended to me, and then I apply my mind. It's not difficult for the minister to remember that.
So that appointment would essentially be unlawful?
It is unlawful.
The draft resolution on the 22nd of September, who has been the source of that draft resolution?
Well, I've got a copy here. Normally the resolutions are put out by the company secretary, Ms. Cavanaugh.
On instruction of?
Presumably on the instruction of the chairperson.
One more question, Chair. On the 1st of August 2016, Mr. Motsoneng announced publicly that he had decided to give 50,000 each to 180 local musicians. Would that be a decision which would have
been... If he gave it out of his own pocket, it's fine. I don't know the problem with it. It was SABC funds and it never came through the board.
It was SABC funds, but that's
It wasn't approved by the board.
Are you aware of any other decisions taken by Mr. Motsoneng which would have required board approval that didn't have board approval?
I remember there was a controversial decision about local content. And Mr. Motsoneng decided that 90% local content, so that more money can flow to local artists. The sentiment was fine, but the manner in which it was wrong.
Thank you so much, sir. And
then
we'll move over to the Honourable Khoza.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, let me probably start by imploring you, Mr. Naidu, to be as brutal and honest with us as possible and be frank with us, because the intention is to restore the governance of the SABC and ultimately to all the state-owned enterprises. Having said that, Chair, as a lawyer, would you concede that there has been, had there not been political interference, Mr. Motsoneng would not have been appointed either as the CEO or GE corporate affairs?
Well, you know, to get the appointed at that level would require some kind of political intervention, assuming one follows due process. But ultimately, the minister has to confirm the appointment of those people. Now, if they were appointed absent due process, then that's political interference.
Then, would you properly identify other political key players other than the minister that should be, might have played a role in this process?
Well, I think, you know, I was quite surprised by the views of the previous parliamentary portfolio committee regarding the three non-executive board members that were dismissed, clear daylight that was unlawful. For some strange reason, that portfolio committee took the view that it was lawful. So, you know, how do ordinary sane members of parliament come to that conclusion? That was a bit startling.
So are you suggesting that the portfolio committee also played a role, the portfolio committee on communication played a role somehow?
Unless, if it wasn't a political intervention, then they probably were. They were not put up on the law.
Okay, thank you, sir. Could you kindly identify the area on your agenda to reflect that there were 3 points of contention with the Manuchin Choice contract? Could you identify at least the 3 in their chronological sequencing, according to you?
That particular contract?
Yep.
I can give you the main points of contention.
Okay.
I think it might be a bit shy of me to now go into commercial confidentiality issues.
We don't allow you to do that. The role of the board is fine, you and the member. You don't get the necessary.
Okay, but I can just give the main issue in that contract that raised a flag for me as a practitioner. Is that contract purportedly was an agreement by multi-choice to use archival material of SDs. And that was the basis of that contract. But it was made subject, the entire contract, the payment for SABC under that contract, was made subject to the condition that SABC would adopt a particular position on set-top control. Now, I found that very interesting, totally unrelated. That's why that contract was unlawful. Secondly, of course, the person that signed it had no authority to sign the contract.
Thank you, sir. I just want to ask you something that's got to do with the retrogression of the financial, the audit opinion by the Auditor General and the irregular expenditure. As you know, you came from 3.4 billion in almost 3.4 billion in 2013, 2014, 2015, and you improved it drastically. But then 2015, 2016, you started going back to, almost going back to where you were. What do you think are the key main factors that are leading to this state of, you know, retrogression?
Well, the factors given to us by the executives of the SABC was that there was a downturn in the economy, so that there was less income on advertising revenue. So, I mean, that was a fair point to make. That led to retrogression, you speak of honorable members. Secondly, there was a write-down of license fees. You know, we had about 2 billion rand of unpaid, uncollected license fees. And these DCs were outstanding for a very long time. And the debate was the question of prescription. You know, does it prescribe after 3 years or does it follow the state rule of 15 to 30 years? That debate went on for a year. And this year we resolved that it was a 3-year prescription. So we had to write down about 2 million rand. We had to write off 2 million rand of license. 2
million
or 2 billion? 2 billion. And then there were certain other issues concerning the VAT. There was a debate between SABC and SARS on when do you charge VAT when you pay license to SABC. Time issues. The license, is it on accrual or on invoice? And Mr. Motsumeng and the group, CEO Mr. Guna, spent a fair amount of time and achieved a measure of success, in my view, and trying to resolve it is before it's still unresolved. So these factors taken together led to a retrogression in the financials.
Thank you very much.
I think the subcommittees were well run. They were well, and the debates were very good in the subcommittees, and the resolutions were good, all directed at benefiting and furthering the interests of the organization. The dysfunctionality came in the two camps, so to speak. So in other words, one can't fault the function of the subcommittee, which led to dysfunctionality. I think dysfunctionality came in the manner in which certain non-executive board members, together with certain executive board members, took decisions in the corporation.
Are you in a way indicating that there were good resolutions which never saw light in terms of business?
The subcommittee resolutions were mainly there to support the organization. For example, on the audit committee, which I sat on as a member, we looked at the past problems in the corporation, how we could resolve them, like, for example, writing up an assets register, which didn't exist in the past. So it was all developmental issues leading to a better SABC.
And the last one is, when you
and I responded in normal English. Maybe that's why he didn't get back to me. He didn't see it. Didn't
you done
that?
Yeah. Honourable Tillem.
I think that was one of the shortcomings, and I know that the company secretary complained very bitterly about the fact that the board members were not properly inducted into the organization. And the reason being that when we appointed as board members, there were several issues consuming the organization, so we had to get straight into the issues. I mean, the SABC multi-choice deal, and then in the next year we had the old Schlaudy, what's the name, appointment issue. So I think that was a major failing. We should have been properly inducted, and perhaps we could have added much more as board members to help the corporation.
Thank you, Mr. Nardi. Secondly, we see that is one of the problems, and from our perspective, is clearly they were individuals driving from the chair position, sort of an executive chair position, where it was very much
draft copies of the MI from time to time. You know, there were several amendments being made to it. And I think around 2014 or 2015, I can't remember the date, it was subsequently approved. But the problem with the MOI, it was done, I think, in contravention, in my view, of the Broadcasting Corporation Act, to some extent the constitution of the country. So when you start amending documents like the MOI, and you don't take due cognizance of the legal framework in which that MOI should have been drawn, that's where the problem started, in my opinion. That's why I believe it ultra-violated the act. Now, I've written about three or four letters to the board, to the company secretary, offering legal advice. I mean, that was my expertise, and that's why I joined the board in the first place. Because I was told and I was recommended to join this board that this board needs some legal advice. So please, consider applying, which I did when I was appointed. So my expertise was to help a board that had problems at the time of the appointment, but needed advice. So we went in with good intentions, thinking that, with our little expertise, we could make it a better SABC.
In the public protector report, when that was released, it was in fact shortly after you became a member of the board. In subsequent events, then it turned out that the person that was accused of, well, the public protector comment here is saying allegation that Mr. Wallace-Wellin committed fraud. Did you at any stage during the meeting where he was appointed in July, did you at any case at any stage raise that issue? Did you put it in writing to say that we cannot endorse this because of the findings of the public protector and that the board will be remiss in its duty? Because that also is flying in the face of the memorandum of incorporation, by the way, which was the reigning one at that particular stage.
Well, the whole basis of the opposition to Mr. Motsaling being appointed as CEO was the public protector's report. One appointed a person into a senior position in a corporation like the SABC in the light of all these damning findings. So there had to be due process first, besides his education qualification did not warrant that he be given that job in the first place, notwithstanding the public protector's. But to put that aside, the educational qualification and the fact that there was so many clouds around him required some kind of process, due process, to clarify issues before he should be considered. So I think he had an incapacity from two points of view. One is he lacked the educational qualification to warrant appointment as a CEO, number one. Number two is, with all these clouds around him, it had to be cleared before he could be considered. And I think any rational person in the position of the minister should have taken that into account.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much, Chair. Can I do, when did you resign? As a board
member? 1st of October 2016.
Where?
Where?
Yes.
And I made a presentation to portfolio committee, parliamentary portfolio committee.
Why did you take a decision that they would be in parliament, resign in parliament?
No, I took a decision well before that. I just thought it was a nice platform to announce it.
Can you elaborate on your presentation on page 3, the top paragraph that deals with Ellen Chalalana as a driver the functioning of the board and the conduct borders on the criminality.
Yeah, you see, Ms. Chabalala, it subsequently came to our knowledge, had a copy of the Ewson report in November of the previous year. It was not disclosed to the board. Now, when you look at fiduciary duties of board members, there are four things. One, there's the duty of good faith. You have a duty to act loyally, and you have a duty to disclose information. You see, so when you don't disclose information, and if you have regard to the key rules around government, and even the amendments to the Companies Act you act in a particular way, contrary to your fiduciary responsibilities of a director, which we were on the SABC board, you could attract criminal liability. That's the law.
So what did you do about that when you put about the nomination?
Well, what did I do at that stage? Well, we were very upset with Ms. Shabalala that she didn't tell us about it. But of course, she then came across very naively saying that, well, I thought it was addressed to me personally, so that's why I didn't disclose it to you. Now, one, I mean, either she was being very honest with us, she was naive, or she was being dishonest. I couldn't make out the distinction.
Now, let's go back to the report of the public intelligence and the position of the board. With the findings of the public protector, and what is your position there? Because the review of the board that arrived, in fact, you arrived at the time when the report was then taken. And I thought that was the time that you just jump ship when you realized that, in fact, they were just breaking the law. What's your view on that? And come again on the issue of judicial review. Was there any discussion in the board to take such a decision or a resolution of the board to take such a decision?
It was recommended to the board that when you are dealing with the public report of the public protector, you really have two options. One is to accept the findings, two is to take it on court on judicial review if you're not happy with the findings. That proposition was put to Ms. Shabalala, but instead she chose the option justifying, creating a justification to show that these findings were not correct. Now, that's not an option. So I think she chose the wrong route.
And what was your position then?
My position was that this matter should have been taken on review, but it was not accepted by the court.
They, obviously, dealing with the risk and internal audit, they almost 5.1 billion Well, what is your position and what is it that must happen moving forward dealing with such finding of the general? Which I understand not the associated name that deals with the without the moving forward the issue of
I think when one has regard to the unlawful or unaccounted for expenditure by the SABC, one must understand the nature of the animal here. The SABC, sometimes things happen and the SABC is then forced to televise certain events of national importance live. And in that time, there's no time to go to the due process. So what I think the way to rectify that is to have a kind of interim process where you can have due process but in a kind of short form. For example, if you look at in the PFMA, you're allowed to do contracts in terms of Section 32, supply chain management. In other words, you can have a shorter form of process but ensure that it is due process and not allow any room for untoward expenditure. So I think there's room or need for improvement in that regard in respect of the SABC. Because from time to time, they are called upon by government to cover certain events which are not really part of their budget, which is not budgeted for. And I think when, because of the lack of a paper trail, because of the urgency of situation, it comes up as an audit query.
And then
what is
that? Thank you. I thank you very much, sir, for availing yourself and for cooperating with the committee in its work. The last thing that I just want to say is that you'll appreciate that we couldn't do or say or ask all the questions that we needed to ask because we're limited by time. However, if there's anything that you subsequently realize is important for this committee, I would also, you can drop a note to Cindy or the best
How long to track? Okay.
Thank you.
Try to maintain the decorum.
wanted to raise a factual matter that when proceedings unfold between the chair and whoever is meeting, the rule of parliament does not allow the crossing of the line. So that's an issue I wanted to raise. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Advocate Onana, and thank you, Chairperson, and members of the committee. My statement starts with a background, and above it, it states my name and the designation that I held at the time, former acting group CEO of the SABC, from July 2011 to January 2012. Background, I was employed at the South African Broadcasting Corporation for almost 20 years, from the 1st of March 1994 to 31 May 2013. During this period, I held several senior editorial and executive positions in the corporation. These included political editor, head of television news, editor-in-chief of radio and television news, head of SABC Africa, head of international affairs, group executive news and current affairs, and lastly, acting group chief executive officer. My statement, Chairperson, covers mainly the period July 2011 to January 2012, when I served as acting group CEO. This submission provides a historical context of the gradual erosion of governance and ethics, as well as the collapse of systems and processes in the SABC. The total disregard for processes and good governance was characterized by irregular appointments and highly questionable decisions. Serving on the board, the appointment as acting group CEO also meant sitting on the board as executive director. At the time, the board of the SABC was made up of 15 members, 12 non-executive directors, and the 3 executive directors, namely the group CEO, the chief financial officer, and the chief operations officer, COO. At the time of my appointment, the positions of CFO and the COO were not filled with permanent appointments.
the CFO was acting and the COO position was not filled at all, either permanently or in an acting capacity. The first thing that struck me when I attended my first board meeting was to find that a member of staff who was neither CFO nor COO was allowed to sit in meetings as a board member. This member of staff is Claudi Motsweneng, who at the time had just been appointed group executive, stakeholder relations and provinces, barely 3 months in the new position. This was a glaring aberration from the norms and the standards of the board to have a staff member, other than the appointed executive directors, sitting in board meetings. I raised this matter with the chairman of the board, Dr. Ben Ngubane, who said to me that Mr. Motsweneng was sitting in board meetings at the invitation of the board. The Motsweneng issue was raised again in a subsequent board meeting by a board member, Advocate Alan Hachi, who wanted to know why Mr. Motsweneng was allowed to sit in board meetings. This time around, the chairman of the board changed the tune and said Mr. Motsweneng was participating in board meetings at his invitation, as it was his prerogative to invite whoever he chose to invite. Acting in the absence of the group CEO, in October 2011, I traveled to Seychelles to attend the General Assembly of the Southern African Broadcasting Association, SABA, which is the SADC version of broadcasting, and attended by heads of broadcasting corporations. I appointed a senior member of the group executive, Mr. Anton Hiernes, to act as group CEO in my absence in terms of the delegation of authority framework. In my view, everything was done properly and in accordance with the DAF requirements. In fact, I had put forward 2 names for acting in my absence, namely Ms. Charlotte Mampane and Mr. Yes. But Ms. Mampane was ostensibly rejected by the board. On my return, however, the chairman of the board, Dr. Ngubane, was not happy with the delegation of Mr. Hiernes either, suggesting that Mr. Motsweneng should have been appointed acting group CEO instead. I was then advised that in future I should leave this matter to the board to decide who must act in the event of following month, in November 2011, I had to travel to Ghana for the African Union chapter of broadcasting, which is the African Union of Broadcasting, of which I was also a member of the Executive Council. On this occasion, I handed the delegation of authority back to the chairman of the board, who in turn would decide who to appoint to act in my absence. I tried in vain to establish who was going to act while I was away, but the decision was made only after I had left the country. On my arrival in Accra, the capital of Ghana, I received an email from my office informing me that Ms. Motsweding had been appointed acting group CEO with effect from 14th November 2011. This came as a shock to me because I had advised against the consideration of Mr. Motsweding to serve as acting group CEO while there were very senior group executive members such as Ms. Mampanye and Mr. Hiernes, among others. The view I held was that Mr. Motsweding was very junior and grossly inexperienced to be charged with such an enormous responsibility. To add to this shock, Dr. Ngubane appointed Mr. Motsweding to the position of Acting Chief Operations Officer, COO, the following day after the appointment as Group CEO, and that was on the 15th of November. With effect from 18th November 2011, just a day after assuming the role of acting group CEO. All these critical appointments were made without the knowledge of the acting group CEO, as I was away on official business. The only conclusion one could draw from these hastily announced appointments within a day of each other was that this was pushed through in haste because I was vehemently opposed to the elevation of Mr. Motsweding to such a senior position. Salary increment, 500,000 rand. In late November, Mr. Motsweding approached me asking for a salary increment. I refused, and I also pointed out to him that this salary increment was in any case a board decision. Subsequently, Dr. Ngubane called me to his SABC office in early December 2011. When I came into his office, I found Mr. Motsweding also present. The chairman then offered me a prepared letter recommending a 500,000 salary increment for Mr. Motsweding. Dr. Ngubane asked me to sign the letter in order for him to approve the recommendation. I refused to sign the letter. Told Dr. Ngubane that in no uncertain terms would I agree to that demand. He tried to persuade me, but I stood my ground, and at this point, Mr. Motsweding stepped in and said, open quote, Chair, I told you that this is not our man, so I am going to Pretoria tonight, close quote. Dr. Ngubane pleaded with me, saying, open quote, please sign this thing so that we settle this matter, end quote. I refused, nevertheless. This chairperson happened at the time when the process of appointing a permanent group CEO was already underway. I had applied for the position, and the advertisement for applications had closed on December 2, before that meeting took place. And the matter was now in the hands of the board. TNA agreement. In another development, Mr. Motsweding initiated a meeting in or about late July with one of the Gupta brothers because they were keen to, open quote, pursue a business partnership close code with the SABC. Several meetings were held mainly with a Mr. Tony Gupta, and the discussion centered around 1. Signing an MOU between the SABC and the TNA Media Group, in terms of which the SABC would allow TNA Media Group to have live broadcasts of its breakfast meetings on Morning Live. 2, agreeing to a huge subscription of the New Age newspapers to be distributed in all SABC offices, national and across 9 provinces, at a substantial cost to the corporation. 3, the Gupta Media Group also proposed having a stake in the then envisaged SABC News Channel. I did not agree to these proposals. These proposals, Chairperson, in my view, were quite drastic and with significant financial implications. I also did not agree with the proposal to cede a share of the envisaged SABC News Channel to an external partner. Such a move would, in any event, require board and ministerial approval. In the end, the position I took did not go down well with the Gupta brothers. Mr. Mutsunin tried to persuade me, urging me to soften my approach in dealing with the Guptas. I refused, pointing out that I would not make irregular and unjustifiable decisions. In conclusion, Chairperson, it was quite evident from the above that the erosion of governance and ethics, as well as the collapse of systems and processes, had started to take root in the SABC as far back as 2008.
Thank you, Mr. Lefe. I am not going to ask you any further questions, but I will ask the committee to admit the statement as evidence of what you see.
why I did not agree to the demand that I should sign.
saying that this man is not in our group, therefore I'm going to veto it.
Well, my understanding was going to Pretoria is going to a high authority. Although I did not in any specific terms have an idea what that authority in real terms represented, but it meant going to a high authority.
The last one, Chair, would be on the book arrangement. Now that you then have left SCTC, was that arrangement or that agreement carried through by SCTC in your understanding now of things that you are not succumbing to? Have you gone through now?
Well, with regard to point one, I know that the SABC continued to have this arrangement with the TNA Media Group to carry the broadcast engagements live on their morning television broadcast show. With respect to the other two points that I alluded to, I don't know what happened to the distribution of the New Age at a subscription cost to the SABC. I don't know what could have happened subsequently. I do know, however, that, and that is with respect to point three, that the SABC then proceeded to launch SABC News, which sits on channel 404, DSTV, and my understanding is that channel is exclusively run and owned by the SABC. And subsequently, the media group then established its own news channel, which sits on channel 405.
Was that the normal thing for the chairman of the board to always approach you to that letter for appointment of the news?
That was actually the first time the chairperson of the board had approached me with an increase. We had never dealt with an increase at that level. So it was the first time that he had raised this matter about the Saudi Muslim salary increase.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
No, I don't quite remember, but the context to that whole approach was that at the time we were even considering to scale down on the number of newspapers that were distributed in the organization and in the newsrooms. In fact, I had even given a notice that newspapers should be circulated only to people who use newspapers as a tool of trade. But it was quite a costly amount, considering that you also had to carry the cost of other newspapers on a daily subscription. Absolutely, I agree that that worked against me because even the timing when this demand was made to me, the demand was made to me at the time when the whole process of appointing a new
The one for a group executive.
The one for stakeholder relations?
Yes, indeed. Yes. No. I know because I was in the group executive. That position had been held by Mrs. Pumelele Ntombela Nzimande. She was actually the person who was, her official title was Chief People's Officer. And that CPO position incorporated stakeholder and provinces. She was literally removed from her position to make way for Hlaudi Motsoeneng. And I may hasten to add, Chairperson, that Mrs. Pumelele Ntombela Nzimande was a very, very capable and very excellent person. And this is actually attested to by the presentations that the SABC made even to Parliament. And the Honorable Killian was on the portfolio committee at the time. So the point I'm making here is there we had a very capable member of staff in the organization who was literally removed from her position without any process as to what had happened to justify removal. And soon after that, Hlaudi Motsoeneng was placed in her position.
Last question, Jefferson. From your position where you are now, outside you have the spectrum, do you think parliamentary portfolio committee conducted in such a way so as to hold the SABC accountable to the CEO?
Which portfolio committee? Which period? I'll get
the period where you sat as CEO.
Oh yes, indeed. The period that I served as acting group CEO and even just shortly before that, I think that portfolio committee held the SABC to account. And we made regular trips, in fact, to this committee in what was quite exceptional because really demonstrating how accountability, how far seriously accountability was taken.
I hope the check is not in the envelope. The check is in the post. No. Honourable Oliver, 5 minutes off now.
Thanks, Chair. The Ministry, I just want to ask two questions. What was the status of Mr. Kaunze in the meetings? Was he an active participant or an observer? And also, did he attend all meetings after the one where his attendance was there?
Which meetings of the board?
Yes, board meetings.
In fact, Mr. Motsoeneng had been sitting in board meetings as early as 2010. So I picked it up in 2011 when I was now a board member. But even before then, he was already participating in board meetings. And upon my becoming an executive director and taking my place on the board, he had continued on that course, sitting in board, but really not making any effective interventions or contributions. He just sat in board meetings, but he was there nevertheless.
What is the policy of SABC on increment? And did you finally get the 500,000 increment?
If he did get that 500,000 rand increment, it would certainly be after my tenure as acting group CEO. The policy is very clear. Increments could take place on two levels. One level is the increment that is subject to the labor process, where the unions would engage management, and finally an increment is agreed at a certain percentage, which is then applied across the board. The second one would be a performance-related increment, which is like a special type of an increment which is accorded to someone who's performing exceptionally. At executive level,
that would have to be taken to board and not be decided by a group CEO or indeed by chairman of the board. A submission would have to be made to the full board to approve such an increment.
The last one is to say, when you left the institution, at your own accord, or there were circumstances that led to your department after it was first 20 years?
I was possibly removed from the organization and prematurely because I had still wanted to continue serving the organization and indeed serving South Africa. But I was literally removed from my job.
I just want to say to Mr. Morris that I am a member of the African National Congress, and the reason why I am giving this umbrella is because I want to assure you that we want to restore good governance at SABC and ultimately in all the state-owned enterprises. And therefore, I would implore to be honest when you're answering the question as you have it, so that we can get to the root cause of this problem. Now, I know that my colleague Lolliwe, as a former trade unionist, would have asked you the question whether you lodged a constructive dismissal with CMA or another institution after you left SABC, or you just left it and wanted to delete that.
No, in fact, my removal from the organization was preceded by a phantom process called a disciplinary process. And when the date was set for the hearing, the group CEO at the time then reported ill. And when we had to meet, we just got reports that no one was. And there were delays. Nothing could happen. And there were just unjustified delays in getting the process underway. I then sought legal advice to really get the matter attended to so that I could return to my job. And the legal process also dragged, but finally what happened, to cut a long story short, the SABC then decided to settle, to say we are settling your contract.
No, that's fine, sir.
Yes.
Okay, when did Mr. Kunsalem join SABC?
Mr. Who?
When did Mr. Sawudi Kunsalem join SABC?
I'm not quite sure because he was employed in the Free State. So I am really not sure when. I don't know.
Okay, don't worry. In your recollection, can you compare and contrast the qualifications of Mr. Mosone and that of Ms. Pumelene Mande?
Oh no, it's a world of difference. Mrs. Ndongela Mzimande has a postgraduate qualification.
Okay.
I cannot speak for Mr. Mosone.
All right. What determined Dr. Mbane ever challenged for backtracking from his original position where he allegedly attributed the invitation of Mr. Mosone to the board meeting to the board when he backtracked and said, no, he was using his own prerogative as a chair? Was he challenged by yourself or maybe Advocate Flower Masato?
Oh, yes.
As cited in your statement.
Oh, yes, indeed.
And what was the response?
It became a big issue at the board meeting, and not only Advocate Tawe Mahlathi raised it, other board members also joined in to express their disapproval. And of course, at the end of all that, then the board chairperson said, well, it was his prerogative.
I'm going to ask you the question that I asked Mr. Nai. Can you identify three key political players that may have played a role in this governance of the SABC.
I don't quite understand. You say who contributed to all this?
Yes. And I'm zooming into the political players. And there's a reason why I am saying that. I believe that such things sometimes, I'm not saying it can happen, maybe it may not be there, but sometimes when people have some authority somewhere, you've made reference to some authority somewhere, and maybe you have some ideas about which authority is that. And I want you to be honest and share that authority with us. Maybe that authority, and I assume, maybe you can answer me, is that authority political or administrative or whatever? What authority are we talking about here?
I'm really not shielding anybody, but your 5 minutes is up.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Pandama.
I think it's a mystery, but having said that, it's a mystery that points to the existence of something that he derives his power from somewhere. Where does he derive it from? I don't know.
To continue with the Honorable Cordo's line of questions, in my mind,
well, in the context that there is some form of protection from the president, you say.
Can you elaborate? When did that happen? Who said that? Please give me details.
Well, I think in the public space, it first emerged when the minister himself said this is the president's choice. So, I mean, in the public space, that was widely reported on. But also in the corridors, it is something that is widely spoken about, that there must be a force somewhere, we don't know where, but somewhere, that protects it. Because just look at it in the space of the last 5 to 6 years, very, very senior and experienced executive members of the SABC were removed. Starting with Mrs. Ntombela Nzimande, coming with me and many others up until fairly recently, and really nothing has happened. But we have also had court rulings and appeals, and you still found that the man stayed on. So clearly that speaks to the existence of a powerful force.
Indeed. Would you say that the powerful force, likely the president, would have supported the removal of you were removed because you didn't agree with Mr. Mutsunen, the person who took the job after you, Mrs. Nakobo, she was removed from her position. Several people have been removed in their positions because they didn't agree with Mr. Mutsunen, or maybe because he coveted the position that they held. Would you say there was some political pressure for people who didn't Mr. Mutsunen didn't agree with, or whose position he wanted or removed?
Well, I think, with due respect, I have tried to assist the committee to say there is a powerful force. But I would be very wary to speculate as to what that force is. My view, Chairperson, is that the committee has at its disposal the power to pursue this matter further and to investigate and to find out. The Office of the Public Protector has demonstrated that you can actually even establish the whereabouts of people. If someone has said, I'm going to Pretoria tonight, you can establish the presence of the person with military precision. And surely some places there are no shebeens around there.
Thank you. One last question. Are you aware of any other deals with the Gupta that may have happened around that time? Other than the TNA deal, were there other instances where the Gupta tried to do business with the FNC?
No, not in my time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Sure, thank you. You indicated earlier that Mr. Musonin came from the Free State. One would assume that he came from the station, or the police station that you find in the Free State at the time. Who was the HR at CBC who would have known about Mr. Musonin's dwelling at the HQ?
I think at the time, subject to correction, given honourable member the size of the SABC, but I think at the time the HR person was Mr. Paul Dati, T-A-T-I.
Going to Pretoria, how did that impact or have an impact after the term from on you as well as the SABC? I mean, dealing with the question, you remember there was a discussion between Mr. Mubana and so on and so on, going to Pretoria, and then if you could just relate to the committee as to what then did you pick up that this may be the Pretoria effect?
Well, right from the moment when I declined to approve the salary increment, I knew that I had taken on a course that would amount to the jeopardizing my career. And when did I pick that up? I think a week after that meeting, there were interviews that were going to be had with the board and the agency that was running the recruitment for the group CEO candidates. And that interview process was tampered with, and the interviews were then postponed indefinitely. And finally, the interviews were held in January instead of the scheduled time in December of 2011. And from that point on, it was quite evident to me that something was now really happening with regard to the veiled threat that has been made.
Before Mr. Nswenin had the group position for whatever that includes provinces and the stakeholder, what position was he holding?
Before that, he had been brought to Johannesburg and appointed general manager in the office of the group CEO. And I may hasten to add, Chairperson, that that appointment also, in my view, was irregular because he was literally airlifted from the Free State, straight parachuted into the office of the group CEO and given the title of general manager in the office of group CEO. And that position did not exist at the time.
And who was the group CEO at the time?
Mr. Solomon Kweke.
I guess, Chair, I should end my question here because I think that some of them have been covered by my colleagues.
Honorable Mokwena. Thank you, Chair.
Catholic. The who was the Minister of Communications at the time? It was Ms. Karim, was it not?
No. The Minister at the time was Ms. Dina Pune.
Dina Pune.
Yes, it is.
Okay. The relationship between the Minister and Mr. Kubani, how would you describe that?
I think it was a normal, cordial relationship.
Nothing special about
it? No, nothing at all.
Yes. So, when Mr. Saudi says that he would leave, that he would go to Pretoria to report on the Southampton Thousand thing, it would be out of the ordinary that he was talking about Ms. Dina Pune, who was just a normal minister doing her work properly, would it?
My take is he had actually made this point that he's going to Pretoria, and it was not necessarily about 500,000. It was in the context of saying, this is not our man. So now I am going to Pretoria.
Did you get a sense, though, that he reported everything, even the fact that he was also just sitting in meetings and not doing anything, that he was reporting to somebody on a regular basis about the goings on of SABC?
I mean, it creates such an impression, and it does leave one with that impression that there is a regular contact of sorts with this line to Pretoria, if it even gets to a point where we disagree on an increment, that would then trigger the response to say, I will be going to Pretoria.
Okay. The Gupta arrangement. The chair of the board would have been aware of such an arrangement.
Well, I know that the chairperson of the board at the time was aware of that breakfast thing because they had attended some of those events with Saudi.
Was it executed during this time?
I am not sure. What I know is I had refused to sign that contract.
So it didn't happen in your term?
The contract,
yeah.
The activity happened, but the contract was not signed.
I see. What was the state of that the Guptas were asking for in the news channel as it was proposed? I know it wasn't signed during the time, but what was the state that was being prepared at the time?
No, there was no contract with regards to that.
Not sure. Yeah.
On paper.
It
was a discussion around having a partnership.
What was the stake of the Guptas in those discussions that they were proposing?
No, that was not stated.
That was not stated.
Yes.
Okay. And then you're leaving the organization. The circumstances quickly in just 15 seconds allow us to ask him our question.
You're not going to ask another question in 15 seconds.
Chair, I think you're particularly upset with me. What was the circumstances? You said you were forced to leave.
Well, basically, I mean, unreasonable demands were made to me. Things like, I have to submit the editorial diary to the group CEO every day. Things that I know have never happened in the SABC in all the years that I have been there. And I have reported to
CEOs such as Zwelakhe Sisulu and Mrs. Cecilia Khuzwayo, and there had never been such an expectation from the newsroom. Most of that, even the editorial policy, was very clear that editorial decisions vest with the newsroom. So making that situation, therefore, difficult for me to bear, and then writing back to the authority at the time to say, I think this demand goes against the spirit and letter of the editorial policies of the SNBC, disciplinary processes were then instituted against me. And then it's the long story that I explained, and finally, that then resulted in my being taken out of the organization.
And at that point, sir, I want to say thank you very much. Now, if you don't trust my timekeeping, everybody is at liberty to keep their time. I will be fair to the letter.
No, Chair, I think it may not be you, it may be your watch.
Okay. I've got two timekeepers here. Mr. Malifa, thank you very much, sir. But as has become thankful, unfortunately, this is what we have to discuss. But between today, between this one and the 28th of February 2017, when we due according to mandate to present our report, if something crops up, you are at liberty to keep talking to the committee. You can send stuff to the committee secretary. And as and when these things come to us, I will share it with the committee who sits in open meeting. So this is not the end of the road by a long stretch. If you want to, you are able to and are at liberty to do so. But for now, we wish you well. Have a good Friday, sir. And if you don't see, you have a very Merry Christmas and a prosperous New Year. Honourable members, at this point we will break for lunch. The next meeting, the next sitting is at 2 o'clock. I know Cindy's already looking at me, probably saying lunch is not ready because we had scheduled it for a bit later. However, we're not going to start with the next one now because it has been scheduled for 2. So you've got between now and 2 to do whatever you want to do. But at 2 o'clock, please be here because we're going to kick start with the last. Thank you very much, and thank you, sir.